ESPN 107.3 presents Wild at Heart, bringing outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond. Wild at Heart, powered by Cowtown USA, Colton Steakhouse and Grill, J. Cook Fly Rods, the Outdoor Superstore, Advanced Performance Shooting, Missouri Trappers Association, and Trout and Sons. Now, Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome to Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3 FM and the Pulse of the Ozarks, beautiful Rolla, Missouri. I'm your host, Tommy Bench. Jerry Cook is my co-host, and John Francis is our radio engineer. Welcome to Wild at Heart. We're red-blooded Americans who remember and cherish our outdoor heritage. We love America and support the Second Amendment. We stand for our national anthem, say please and thank you, and open doors for the ladies. We hunt, fish, trap, shoot, float, camp, and explore in God's country, the Missouri Ozarks, right out your back door and occasionally a few points beyond. Join us each Wednesday at 4 p.m. right here on ESPN 107.3 FM, or catch us Sundays at 8 a.m. or anytime online at ESPN1073.com. This segment of our show is Wild at Heart is brought to you by J. Cook Fly Rods Custom Fly Rods, plus everything you need for fly fishing, located in downtown St. James. We're going to start off talking to Zach Feeler. Zach is a good friend of mine and a multi-species angler that likes to fish for crappie and bass and just a lot of different species of fish. But in particular, he's like-minded and he's got a smallmouth mentality. And that's another reason why I want to talk to him about is what he was thinking about smallmouth, because him and I are both looked upon, on the river, especially on our series, as two of the smallmouth guys that particularly think about smallmouth anyway. So welcome to the show, Zach.
Thanks.
Well, hey, I know you was talking about, you just showed me some pictures here a minute ago about your some smallmouth you've been on to here lately. How have the smallmouth been biting on the rivers? And have you been checking the water temperature or anything like that, or does it matter, you think?
I haven't really been fishing very much. I've been trying to deer hunt quite a bit, but
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I hadn't been since about October, but I went today for a few hours. And water temperature is 44 degrees. Biting pretty good today, really. I caught a lot of nice fish today, mainly on a jerk bait and on a jig.
Yeah, well, good. Yeah. That's my way of fishing right there. I like throwing a jerk bait and a jig. You know, Jerry over here, he a lot of times he doesn't know what the heck we're talking about when we talk about this stuff, but vice versa. He starts talking about his fly fishing ways, and I'm like, what in the world is a articulated? I know what an articulated streamer is now. But in the past, you know, I thought, what is this stuff? So I was real, you know, real curious to learn this stuff. But so how many people sitting around this studio right here knows what a jerkbait is? When he says a jerkbait, I know Bill knows what he's talking about. Do you know what he's talking about?
I've learned.
it's kind of like a streamer pattern. Yeah. It's basically a dying bait fish. You know, it's a hard bait that you'll twitch around, and it's got that erratic dying bait fish action. And in the wintertime, it's deadly. I mean, it's killer. Well, there's a guy.
That's what fish like, really.
They do.
Because they can take advantage of it without expending a lot of calories to have a tasty meal there.
Right. No, for sure.
Tommy, I just saw an 8.2 largemouth just the other day from Stockton.
Really? On a jerkbait?
On a jerkbait. 95% of the fish brought in were caught on jerkbaits.
Wow. Well, you know, later on, I'm going to talk in some later segments about some, this, you know, we're talking about winter patterns right now, whether it be fly fishing or casting like Zach and I do. But anyway, Zach, tell us more about what's been going on. I tell all my guests is don't ever give away any secret spots. Don't even remotely close hint around.
Why
to
not?
You
know, I'm taking notes.
Bill's paying attention. But there was a guy, and you probably know, well, Bill's on that site too, on the Ozarks, that Ozarks smallmouth page that I started.
Yep.
Well, he posted some pictures, and I thought, dadgummit, dude, I know exactly where you're at, and I know a lot of other people do too. So I was like, just don't tell anyone where you caught that fish, a little winky face, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And his buddy said, dadgum amateur, he's not very good. He's like, I tried to hide him. I was so excited. He caught two big smallies and went with a jerkbait.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made
that.
Me think of it. That's a heck, two heck of a fish.
Yeah.
But it's just one of them deals. You don't want to give away. Some of them winter spots are like,
Yeah, there ain't very many of them winter holes.
And, yeah. If you find out where a winter hole is and you broadcast it, it could be ruined in one winter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, well, let me ask you this. The water temperature being what it is that sending the fish deeper?
Well, this is what happens in the wintertime pattern. And I'm going to give away some of the winter holes here. But in the wintertime, they can't sustain just anywhere. There's got to be, most of the time, either a really deep hole with a lot of rock or... I don't even want to give away the other one, but there's basically that's the main thing is you want some deep water, and with anything, I'll put it this way, any type of water that can maybe give them a couple degrees warmer temperature, that's it.
Right.
If you give them a little bit more comfortability, then that's all they need. But that's about it.
And a food source, of course.
Well, the reason why they're there is because that's where the food source goes.
Right.
So all the bait fish mm-hmm. are going to go to that same warmer water, and then, of course, in essence, they're going to go there, too, and follow them. But, so what else have you been catching them on there, Zach, as far as –
Well, I only threw two things today. I only threw a jerk bait and a jig, and I caught fish on both of them. And
That's all you needed, wasn't it?
It was working, so I didn't change.
Yeah.
I didn't put it down. Didn't need to.
Yeah, you didn't need to. There's no sense in changing. You know, I'll tell you what. Me and my buddy Jack Uxa went to a winter hole the other day, and you know it, but I'm not going to tell anyone else where it was at. And
I'll ask Jack.
Hey, if anyone recognizes that voice, by the way, that's the old host of this show, Bill Cooper. So I'm glad he's here. It's been a pleasure having him back on the show, and it's a very familiar voice that I love to listen to.
Hey, it feels like old times.
It just, does, doesn't it?
Just younger faces.
Yep. The older faces have moved over, and the younger faces have moved to here. Yeah. We'll keep a rotation
going. I'm glad Mr. Jerry's still here to hold the spot for the – what are we, John – which 70 years, what do you call those?
Alzheimer's?
Besides that, Alzheimer's, did you say?
it's kind of a cross between Alzheimer's and old-timers.
Well, if you're 80 years, it's an octogenarian, right?
Or a septuagenarian.
Is that what we are?
Septuagenarian. Well, okay. Well, is that a real term?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. We can't spell it, but we are one.
Well... Anyway, it's good to have you back on, Bill. It really is.
Hey,
I missed you.
It's fun, but I got to tell you, you're cutting into my sleep time, you know.
Well, that's – yeah. You realize that how early you go to sleep when you get to that age. It just keeps getting earlier and earlier and earlier.
Yeah, but I get up for 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, too.
That's true.
You young guys do that.
Well, we get up pretty early. Stay up late, too.
We get up early and go to bed early, you know, and they stay up late and get up late.
I've always been that way. There used to be some crazy saying about that early bed and early rise.
Early bird gets
the worm. Healthy, wealthy, and wise? I'm none of them.
Well, so we're talking to Zach Feeler here about his wintertime tactics and just fishing in general. You know, I want to talk to Zach. I'm going to have him for the whole show, so we're going to get to hear. And as long as Bill can stay awake, we're going to have Bill for the whole show as well.
I'm yawning already, man.
I bet we're going to have to keep you entertained that way.
That's right.
Keep your jaws moving and keep you wide awake.
Well, I was hoping Zach would show us some phone pictures of the fish he caught today.
Well, right? I'm sure he will. Everyone knows it's social media. I usually go live when I have a live guest here. I try to have as many live guests as I can, and we done this first segment without going live, but I'll go live this next segment because a lot of people really watch this Facebook.
Now, I don't understand some of this younger stuff. You've had guests on that are not alive?
Well, they're not live in the studio.
I'm getting worried.
Yeah. There's one of them old jokes again. Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
I got you. I get you.
Okay, carry on.
No, it's good to have him, and we're going to go live this next segment, I think. But, you know, I will say this. Whenever it comes to smallmouth, that's something else we'll talk about next segment. Zach won the smallmouth only tournament this year. You know, and that's a tournament that a lot of guys do. Either they excel in it or they don't excel in it. And that's another reason why I said he's kind of like me. But I've always been – talked about as being a smallmouth guy. You know, when it comes to like Seth, when he was on the show here a couple weeks ago, he said the same thing. Seth is always catching the largemouth, and I'm always catching a smallmouth. That's just my mentality, and that's kind of like Zach. He's got a smallmouth mentality. When it comes to smallmouth, he excels, and he knows how to catch them. So when it comes, you know, I fish with him every tournament, and it never fails. He'll come up. I've seen him win tournaments with all smallmouth, which is impressive, and that's when it's not a smallmouth-only tournament because smallmouth don't hold their weight like a largemouth does. And so, you know, that's just something I think is pretty special about him. And he's kind of fond of me because I love smallmouth. That is my absolute passion. So another guy that has the same thought process that I do, I want to pick his brain and find out. Kind of, you know, the same deal.
Absolutely. But yep. I've been in the Ozarks for about 40 years, and I can tell you there are a lot more really good smallmouth fishermen today than there were 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
These guys are sharp, and the competition has got to be keen with the people with the knowledge that they have of both the smallmouths and the rivers they fish.
Yes, absolutely. And it changes, you know, and the fishing pressure changes the fish, and there's so many variables that come into play that people don't even think about. But, hey, we're rambling on. I've got a bad habit of doing this. I've been talking most of the time. I want to hear from you, Zach. So, we're winding down the first segment already. We've only got just 45 seconds or so before we got to go to commercial and take note of some of our sponsors here. But we'll be back here after a while, and I want to talk about that, you know, about the smallmouth, the way you think, you know, without giving anything specific away.
Right.
And just kind of how you prepare yourself when you're fishing a smallmouth-only tournament as opposed to any black bass, or you know, when you're changing gears from bass from smallmouth to maybe crappie, or you know, or deer hunt, whatever it is, you know, just because you're an avid outdoorsman.
You're,
and
you're
all.
Killing me, Tommy. I'm here taking notes for article material, and I need specifics.
All right, well, hey, this next segment we'll come up with specifics. We'll be back with Zach Feeler in just a few minutes. This is Wild at Heart. I'm Tommy Bench. We'll be right back.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3 FM. This segment is brought to you by Cowtown USA, home of K&M ATVs and UTVs, located in Cuba, Missouri. We're still here with Zach Feeler, and we also got our old host, Bill Cooper, here, and as well as Jerry Cook, of course. But, hey, Zach, we're wanting to talk to you about smallmouth in particular. Like I said, I want to hear what you think about smallmouth and how you really, truly excel in that smallmouth because – you know, there's very few people that are successful. They're just like, oh, I'm the best thrower ever was. But I'm going to say it for you. You're good at what you do. I've fished with you a lot. I've known you for several years, and you're really impressive when it comes to smallmouth in particular. You always come up with some good smallmouth. So what are some things that you, if you're going to give somebody some tips without saying, hey, I go to this certain spot down from this bend, you know what I mean? You know how that all works. But, right. I mean, what are some things you're keying in on that give you that smallmouth mentality?
Well, I mean, it's basically you got to know where smallmouth live at first. I mean, you got to look at, you know, moving water. You know, they like moving water.
Right.
Be around moving water. I don't know if it's just the more oxygen level, you know, amount in the water. I don't know what it is. But you got to fish around shoals, you know, above shoals, right below them, right on them. You know, and largemouth kind of want to be in the more of the dead water, not near
right.
as moving.
More the stagnant.
More stagnant water, yeah.
Sloughs, real slow-moving eddies or what I call, you know, whatnot.
Right.
Are you taking notes, Bill?
No, actually, you know what I'm doing?
You got to pay attention over here if you want a good article.
You're recording it all.
Oh, so you're just going to go back and watch my Facebook Live video?
Yeah. I'm throwing you a curve here. I'm actually talking to a guy in Mexico putting together an oscillated turkey hunt for March.
Are you?
Yeah, as we speak.
Well, I better continue with Zach then about our smallmouth, and because I don't get to go on that turkey hunt, but I get to fish with this guy once in a while. So
that's not all bad.
It's not bad at all. So what are some of your favorite smallmouth lures that you like to use? You know, I'm sure it's seasonal. You know, there's certain times that I'll use, and just like How many times have you come back to the ramp, or I've come back to the ramp, and someone's like, man, that's a good one. What'd you catch it on? That's what they always ask. They want to know. That's all they care about. What'd you catch it on?
Yeah.
What'd you catch it on? Just like I met the guy from home. Yeah. What'd you catch it on?
What color? What size?
Where was that at? Where'd you fish it? You know?
Every detail. Yeah.
They want to know it
ain't
all.
Happening.
Caught it on a banjo minnow.
Yeah.
And you know, you can put two fishermen together using the same, in your case, lure, in our case, flies. But if you're working that lure or fly differently, you're going to have different results. And my main fishing buddy and I have fished together throwing absolutely the same color fly, the same pattern. One of us will be catching fish and the other one won't.
Well, and a lot of it depends on your presentation, too.
Exactly. That's what I was leading up to.
Yeah, you can throw a jig out there, but if you're retrieving it at a steady retrieve, that's not the way you fish a jig. But I've had clients do that. I'll say, man, you're just slaying them because the fish are slow, and I'll go out, throw a jig out. Because that's my bread and butter is a jig. It's always been my strongest point. And I'll catch a fish or two, and they're like, I got to have that. And then they'll throw it, and they'll be talking to me, just going like this. I'm like, you got to stop. And they're like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, no, you got to literally stop and let it fall down to the bottom and let it sit and then drag it. You mean, oh, okay. Well, they don't have the concentration or they'll stop and let it go to the bottom. Then they'll get to talking again, and next thing you know, they're just doing this. They're so used to just that repetition of cast, retrieve. So I've got over the years to where a lot of my guiding anyway – I'll get the simplest cast and retrieve method I can, because if I can find a cast and retrieve method that's going to catch fish, it's going to be successful for them. But you're exactly right. The presentation makes a big difference on, you know, some guys who just got that feel better too. You know, they can.
Well, all of you guys sitting here know this, but one of the greatest lessons that any fisherman can learn is to see a fish. Sight fishing and being able to see how that fish reacts to your, not only your bait, but your presentations. And I think so often, unless, you know, you're throwing buzz baits or something, people fish too fast.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
No, they do. They don't slow down and really pick it apart. And that's one thing that has been my nemesis, because I really pick things apart. And I've talked about this with Seth. It's kind of hurt me in some ways, because the first time I ever fished with him, he was like, man, you know, you got on this river, and you just tell me how you want to fish. And I told him, I said, I want to throw a jig around this cover and whatnot. I ended up catching 2 18-inchers that day. And then after that, we got to know each other a little bit better, got more comfortable around each other. Well, it got to where he started fishing his strengths, which is moving quickly. And I really stop and slow down. I mean, I still do okay. I've adapted to it. But I'd rather go to a spot that I know there's fish and really pick it apart.
Yeah. Well, so, one of the largest smallmouth I ever caught was in Canada, and it was so interesting because I actually caught the fish twice. I caught it, Jerry, caught it the first time on a big streamer, and it broke my leader, but I went back to the same spot next day because this was a big female cruising a rock bluff line, and I took a jig, Tommy.
Yeah,
and
I love jigs.
Yeah, I tossed this jig out on a big flat top boulder. I mean, it was as big as this room, and I'd seen the bass coming, and she stopped, and she saw that jig immediately and swam right up to it, and it's just laying on the bottom doing nothing. And swam up to it and put her nose to it like she's smelling of it, and then she started swimming and pushing it across the top of the boulder. The rock, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then she backed off about a foot, and when she backed off, I didn't jig it. I just raised my rod tip, and that jig head stood up, and she engulfed it. That fish came out of the water 7 times, and I landed her that
really
time. But I could identify her because she had a big sore spot on one of her gill plates.
Yeah.
But I would have, if I couldn't have seen that fish, I'd have never, ever fished that jig the way I did.
Have you ever seen a fish? I mean, I know you've seen that one, eat that one, but have you, any of you ever really stopped and watched a fish and how they eat something,
mm-hmm.
especially a bottom bait?
Yes.
Well, how I learned the most about smallmouth is, and any conservation agent that's listening to this, I apologize, but I kept smallmouth when I was in my younger years because I was so enthralled with them. I wanted to learn about them. So I would bring them home, and they were legal fish, but I did. I put them in my tank, and I watched how they had their feeding habits. And people think that that bite is the actual the thump you feel, the thud or the thump, is because of them chomping down on it. And it's really not. It's what they do is they open their mouths and their gills so fast that it forces all that water through their gills, and it sucks it in like a giant vacuum cleaner. So it's just real fast. And that's what that and I never knew that, you know, and they really pin it down to the bottom. A lot of times you'll see little rocks, you know, from the bottom of my tank going through their gills. But they've got a pretty good system going on there.
In a tank situation like that, it's interesting to watch them feed with competition around. When I was naturalist at Bennett Springs State Park many moons ago, we had a huge aquarium with about 6, 7, 8 different species of fish in that tank, a largemouth, a smallmouth, a goggle eye, and various sunfishes. And we would feed them small minnows. And when you started dropping those minnows in the tank, the first thing, the smallmouth was, as I remember, about 10 or 11 inches.
Yeah.
And we had a largemouth was like 15 or 16 inches, much larger. But as soon as we started dropping minnows, the first thing the smallmouth did was he didn't start feeding. The rest of them started feeding. He started thumping them in the sides and putting them all in the corners, including the much larger largemouth. Then he would feed till he was full, and he'd drift to a corner. Then the largemouth would feed, and right on there was a pecking order.
Yeah.
And that smallmouth was at the top of the pecking order.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
He was dominant, wasn't he? He was
absolutely very aggressive.
He was the alpha in that body of water, and that's funny because I didn't have I have had them all together one time, but I'll tell you what I would do is I'd buy them feeder goldfish, and as I would drop them in there, that fish was like a dog. He knew. We called him Billy Bass, you know, because the old Billy Bass that was on the wall, you know, so his name was Billy. And I'd go up there to Billy Bass, and he'd just sit there and just, like, back and forth. He'd just, like, pacing, because he'd see me walking up, and he knew what time it was. It's time to eat. And I dropped them fish in there, and, I mean, he would make a run just as fast as you could from one side of the tank to the other, and all you seen was gold scales come out of his fins, and then he would make a run again and again until he was done. He'd do that sometimes 5 to 7 times, 5 or 7 fish. Then he was done. But it was amazing. And then I got to where I could literally hold it at the top of the water, and he'd come up and meet it right out of my hand. So pretty neat.
I've enjoyed watching trout down on the Merrimack when the water's really clear.
Yeah.
You'll throw them like a Copper John or some kind of a nymph pattern, and they'll come up and look at it, and they may swim away and then turn around and come up and then just hit it hard. I also like to fish a two-fly rig, sometimes a prince nymph with a gold rib hare's ear about 18 inches beneath it. And it's really interesting to watch those fish because they'll come up and they'll look at one of them and hit the other one, and then the next fish you catch may look at that one and then go hit the other fly.
Huh. Yeah, so, that's odd.
Yeah, it is, but it's really interesting to watch how they look at those flies and how they consume them.
So, Zach, you know, we're talking about, you know, your smallmouth, how you target smallmouth. What are some of the things you look for when you target them smallmouth? I know you're looking for moving water, but is there any certain colors you think are better than the others? Or no, and you don't have to. Yeah. You don't have to give that away.
That's all going to depend on water.
Give it away. I won't know.
Water clarity is going to make a big factor in which color I choose.
Yeah,
you know, kind of like you alluded to on an earlier show. You know, darker the water, dirtier the water, dark color.
That's right. Yeah,
you know, you can use a little bit lighter color on clearer water.
Yeah,
but mostly what I use is green pumpkin. I ain't gonna lie.
You can't go wrong with that.
Can't go wrong with green
really,
pumpkin.
Really, you could just stick with green pumpkin the rest of your life.
It works on almost any water
clarity.
That is an
incredible color. And while we've got so many smart heads here, you know, I've never really heard a good discussion about why green pumpkin is so good. Any ideas?
I think it just matches the color of the crawdads out there in the river, and it's dark enough where you can see it in dirty water.
Hey, let's talk about that in a later segment here, but we're winding down to the end of this segment, and we'll talk about that later on in this show. So coming up in segment 3, we're going to have Darren Kime talking about some PFD safety this wintertime, you know, when you're out on the water. It's definitely an important topic to talk about, so stick with us. You're listening to Wild at Heart, and I'm Tommy Bench.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart. Remember, you can always listen to Wild at Heart anytime you want at our website, ESPN 107.3. Amazon.com. Just click Programming and Wild at Heart. Or, if you have an Amazon Echo, just ask Alexa to play Wild at Heart from TuneIn Radio, and she'll bring you up to the latest episode for you. On this segment, we're going to be talking to Darren Keim about PFD safety, in particular this winter time and how cold the water temps get. It is vital to your safety and your survival if you fall in the water. So welcome to the show, Darren.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Well, we're just sitting here excited to talk more about the outdoors and educate people a little bit on the safety of wearing your PFD. And like you talked about, it could literally be a lifesaver.
Yeah, like I said, that you know, this time of year the water gets down to 40s and even down to 30s, and if you fall in, if you don't have your PFD on, guys, you're just flat, you're in trouble. You know what I mean?
Yeah, to clarify a PFD for some of you non-anglers or the guys that may not be used to that phrase as much as we are, is a personal flotation device. And what that is it's essentially a life jacket. So you put your life jacket on. If you can get one that's a what do you call it? It's auto-inflatable. If it hits the water, they're perfect, you know, because if you hit your head on the way down, whatever it is, accidents happen. And this time of year, you fall in the water, it could literally be the difference between you going home to your family or not. And that's one thing we want to talk about and share on the show that Darren and I would talk about. We are hard-headed as anglers. We really are, and we think, oh, we're tough. We ain't no big deal. But we gotta stop being selfish and think more about ourselves and think more about our families and our wives and husbands and kids and uncles, aunts, and whatnot. You know, that's what we need to think about. And so, Darren, there's a friend of yours that that actually ultimately lost his life because of the same situation. And, you know, I was wanting, let's talk about that a little bit. You know, I know you talked to his wife and you got permission to talk the story. And I think it's important, not trying to scare people, but if they understand that this could happen to anyone, you know, and all it takes is one little slip up, you slip off that boat, especially in the wintertime. Not only is the water cold, but any kind of moisture that's on your boat turns into ice. So, you know, you're standing on the edge where in the summertime it ain't no big deal. You know, you're doing what a lot of guys do, taking a leak off the side of the boat or whatever it is. Well, now you slip and you fall in the boat, especially being by yourself. Now you've got a dangerous situation without having a PFD. So let's talk about this story, just so maybe we can draw awareness to how important it is and what can be done to prevent this. So go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, last spring I had a buddy, Jason Charlton. Excellent fisherman, incredible river man. I mean, he's just a top-notch cat fisherman over on Truman Lake and fishing the Osage River from the dam on down. And last spring one day, I mean, he went and I don't know, his buddy canceled out on him or something like that or whatever. But anyway, he ended up out by himself and he fell in with no PFD. And like I said, he drowned. And like I said, when we found Jason the next day, guys, standing on that boat ramp that cold morning over there when the water patrol broke the news to his wife is, you know, I've been Desert Storm and all this and that. And that was one of the hardest things I've ever done is to be there with his wife when that news was delivered. And, you know, we just, you know, we think it won't happen to us, you know, and I'm a big, tough, knobhead too, just like everybody else. But guys, it happens before you know it. You know, I think Tommy can tell stories about falling in when it's cold. I've fallen in when it's cold, and we're just blessed that it didn't happen. But
yeah,
you know, Jason left a young wife and two young boys, and I mean, man, them boys was his world, and they loved to fish and they loved their dad. And dad's gone now, and you know, I mean, there's just, you know, from wearing your personal flotation device to actually in the summertime practicing getting back in your boat if you fall in. You know, I mean, there's, you know, if you don't have a ladder that you can deploy on the back of your boat to get back in or whatever, you know, let's try to figure out how to get around the back of the boat and get up on your motor and trim your motor down and get on your motor,
right,
and raise yourself up out of the water. Or just, you know, just so something, training makes it to where that's, stuff just kicks in on that kind of instinct, you know. And something else that is very important, Jason's clothes weighed like 80 pounds wet. You know, and I know most of us are deer hunters and this and that and whatever, and when we go fish in the wintertime, we throw on our Carhartts or whatever and go fishing, guys.
Coveralls. We got four or five layers, boots on, three socks.
Your boots. Get, spend the money. We've all got hundreds of dollars of fishing rods laying around. Spend a couple hundred bucks and get you some bibs that are made for fishing that are around the water. Even if you don't buy a float suit, get something, you know. Your Carhartts are bad news on the water.
Yeah.
And things are just, they just get heavy. And again, I've, until recently, I did it too. I mean, but just say, budget this. Even if you don't buy it at the same time, budget some money and get them clothes upgraded to fishing stuff. And there's a lot of good products on the market now that are lightweight that don't absorb all this water and just pull you down, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, because essentially, not only are you in cold water situations, but now you weigh 80 to 100 pounds more. It's going to be even that much harder. Even if you do grab the side of the boat, you might have been able to lift yourself up in normal conditions, but now you got sub-freezing temperatures, you know, upper 30 degree water temps. You may have a little bit of a breeze blowing. Now you got an extra 80 or 100 pounds on you that now it's going to be almost impossible to get in that boat, especially by yourself. So that's another thing, you know, a tip that I'll throw out there is, you know, in the wintertime, try to make it a point not to fish by yourself. If you absolutely have no other option but to fish by yourself, then do everything you can to protect yourself and your family to where you go home to them. Another thing is if you keep an extra pair of clothes and socks, hats, car, you know, whatever, even if it is the Carhartts as your extra pair, because if you do fall in the water, if say you're on the lake, now you've got to run back. How many miles are you away from the closest from your you know, to a ramp? So, you know, you may have in temperatures in the teens or single digits or 20s, but now you're soaking wet. You're already freezing. Now you got that wind blowing against you running, however fast you're running. It's going to be deadly. So, you know, keep some extra clothes with you, a blanket, some hot hands, whatever it takes, you know, this time of year, because as much as we all love to go out there and catch these fish, it ain't worth your life, and it's definitely not worth leaving a family behind. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, like you said, and again, we're knuckleheads, you know, and when we, I talked to the Water Safety Council about this last spring, and the Water Patrol, you know, and they promised, they said they would do whatever they could do to help us out to get this word out.
Yeah.
But I'm just, basically, my word to them was, as fishermen, we're not very smart, you know, and none of us are, because we go out and continue to do this every day.
Yeah.
I said, we need somebody to help educate us and protect us from ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, don't do it. You get in your car, you put your seatbelt on because you may have a wreck, you know, or whatever. But
right.
You know, do it for your family. Even if you won't do it for yourself, you know, just think, man. And it could happen. You could fall in, and it happens before you even realize it. But do it for your family.
And once it happens, it's too late. As soon as it happens, you may look at yourself or think to yourself, what was I thinking? I should have done this. I should have done that. But it's too late. You know, you can't go back and change it now. So, you know, I've always said this. My mom's always accused me of being an overprotective parent. But I'd always told her, I said, you know what, Mom? I'd rather be able to prevent something than to live the rest of my life with regret, thinking I could have prevented that. So,
absolutely.
You know, and that's absolutely the same deal when it comes to boat safety or anything, especially this time of year. Yeah, things change. You know, it's not 85 degree water temps in the summer like it is in the summertime. And so, you know, there again, you know, take a buddy with you. Make sure you have some warm clothes and just be very cautious of what you do on the water when it's this cold. And, you know, because it could be deadly, like you said. And we want to try to bring awareness to this as much as we possibly can, even if it saves one family, you know, one family from having their – what's –
Another thing that the people need to keep in mind is just have a simple plan, because you've only got a few minutes in cold water and you're going to succumb to it.
Yes.
So have some kind of simple plan to get back in that boat.
Exactly. Like Darren was talking about, if you don't have a ladder, maybe install one. You know, as much as spend the money, that may be a lifesaver. Or if you can get on the back of the motor, and all them outboards have a trim right on the back of it, you can trim your motor up and possibly get in that way. I mean, whatever it takes to get in. Like you said, if you've got a plan, then at least you're not, because what happens when you're in a situation? You're in scramble mode and you're in panic. You're in panic mode.
Exactly.
So you're not thinking like you normally would. But if you've already got a plan, you already know what you would do in that situation. As soon as it happens, it's going to be like just automatic. Hey, I went through this a million times.
To do.
Yeah, I know what to do. I know what to do. This is what I need to do. But otherwise, if you never come up with a plan before, you're not going to be thinking clearly. And
if you fish with a buddy regularly, practice in the summertime.
Yes.
And, hey, pull one another out of the water. I just had a guide friend just a few weeks ago. He was on front of the boat with a gentleman who weighed close to 400 pounds. The guy stumbled, knocked the guide out. The guide and the fisherman went in as well. The guide managed to get back in the boat, but you ever try to pull a wet 400-pound guy back in the boat?
Oh, no.
Yeah, and the guide actually injured himself getting this man back in the boat, but he saved his life.
Yeah.
You know, he had a plan.
He had a plan.
Well, let me ask one more question here.
Go ahead, John.
So I have a life jacket that I bought back in, you know, 1985. Is this still good today? Or do
these
things need to be replaced?
It's probably not in style. But I don't think that it would. I don't think that it would matter as far as the flotation, because unless it's a see what we have a lot of them are the automatic. Because am I using this right? They're basically they're water. Help me out here, Darren. How do these
most of them, the ones I wear? They're it's an Onyx brand. It's an auto manual. It's got a ripcord on it, but it's also got a diaphragm in there. And you need to open that up periodically and inspect that diagram. And it's kind of got a red, green, go, no-go kind of indicator on there. And I would say those, you know, I've got ones that are 3 or 4 years old, and they still show good. But here's the deal.
You can
pick them up for $70.
And not only that, Darren, these things are super light. You don't even realize they're there. I mean, Jack and I was fishing the other day, and Darren was commenting about it. You forget you're even wearing them. You're casting your traditional life jacket. It's so big and bulky in the way. You don't want to wear that thing. But you do. Yep. We do anyway because of safety. But the ones that Darren's talking about, you don't even realize they're there, and it's well worth the money. Yep.
And that's where a lot of people get in trouble fishing cold weather. They'll wear them while they're running, but as soon as they stop, they take that thing off.
But a lot of fly fishermen use the type of vest that you're talking about because they are lightweight and you hardly know you have one on.
Right.
And you don't risk catching a fly in it as well.
Now, what was you saying there, Darren?
Well, I was just going to say, and this is just something that's kind of, again, I've got a bad shoulder and an artificial hip, so I wear mine all the time. But one thing I would add probably is we've got some 80-mile-an-hour bass boats out there. And I'm not saying the auto inflate wouldn't work, but I'm just saying when you're up on pad running 80 mile an hour, I'm probably going to wear that big foam
snap
on full size life jacket.
And that's a smart way to do it, because if you get knocked out on the way out, if something bad happens, more than likely you're going to have an impact, a bad impact. So you're going to be the story and not know up or down or anything. But hey, Darren, that's the end of our segment here. We've run out of time on that segment, but you know, I appreciate you being on the show. I think it's a very important topic, and I'm glad we got to talk about it. So thanks again, Darren. I'm so glad to have you on the show and be able to talk about that particular subject. So
thank you guys for helping us raise awareness for this cause. I mean, this is something we got to do for everybody.
It's absolutely. Thank you again, and I look forward to having you again.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, you too.
I'm your co-host, Jerry Cook. Coming up, we'll be talking with Bill Cooper himself. This is Wild at Heart. Stick around.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart. We're happy to have with us today Bill Cooper. Welcome, Bill.
Hey, man, it's a pleasure to be here. This is just like old times.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's exactly like old times. We just swapped mics, didn't we?
Yeah, you bet. Got some young, good-looking guys in here, Jerry.
I like
to see that muscle. You know, I don't see much looking in the mirror anymore.
We've kind of lost some of ours, haven't we?
I dropped.
Good thing Zach's here. He's the one. Got the big guns on him.
Got the physique.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, that's from fishing all the time.
Man. I know. Setting the hook on those giant smallies.
All that casting, jerking.
Well, Bill, I think you have a guest that we're going to have on today. And why don't you introduce him?
Oh, yeah. David Gray, longtime friend. He's one of those old guys, too.
Yeah.
He'll fit right in with us. David, you on the line with us, buddy?
I am. Thank you. Glad to be here. Thank you, Bill.
Hey, it's always good to hear from somebody from the western side of the state. You know, I just got back from over there. I was down at the deer lease. We were trying to duck hunt, and we like froze to death, broke ice for 2 hours one morning, and didn't kill a duck. It was tough.
Sounds like fun.
Oh, it was tons of fun. And actually posted a photo the other day of a guy that was pretty muscular, you know, with a handful of ducks. Not tough guys do kill ducks. I'm just not tough anymore. Well, David, what's going on in your life? I know, you're quite an entrepreneur, and you've always got something exciting going on.
Well, it's nice of you to say. I'm not sure all about that, but, you know, the other day you asked me about the holiday show we're doing, which is a virtual show on the Internet. This is the first year, the inaugural one, and it's called the Holiday Sportsman Show. And it's about, you know, these days a lot of people like to do that, sit at home on the couch and order things online. So
you betcha.
We thought we'd try to connect, you know, quality brands that offer great gifts and products for sale during the holidays with consumers that, you know, want to do that, want to shop off their computer. So that's what we're doing. This is the first one, and it's been pretty well received, so it's kind of fun, actually.
Well, good deal. Just for explanations, explain to folks what a virtual sports show is.
Well, when you log into it, and the name of it's the Holiday Sportsman Show. You can put that in Google or just type that in your browser, Holiday Sportsman Show. And it mirrors, so to speak, what we're all used to doing when we go, you know, to a convention hall and we go to what we call a traditional sports show or boat show. It's got a lobby and a welcome video, and it's got halls. So it's got some fishing halls, hunting and shooting halls. And it actually puts the consumer, the holiday shopper in this case, in charge. So you get to the lobby, you see the welcome video, you choose what hall you want to go to. You can go to, in this case, they're booths, and they look like booths. They're digital, but you choose the brand you want to stop in, click on it, go in, it goes full screen, and everything in there is about that brand. We got like Gallery of Guns in there. We got Feathercraft out of St. Louis, Missouri, a premier fly fishing dealer. We got Ozark Ridge Calls from down there near Lebanon. We got Ranger Boats, so we got some great national brands. And consumers like it because it's kind of a fun way to shop and browse. And,
well, it sounds pretty interesting. Can old people like us negotiate this thing?
You may have to go with
absolutely.
Me, Bill.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody says it's easy to do and it's fun. And we've also got a fundraiser in there. I want to mention that. We're doing the Conservation Federation or the Conservation Heritage Foundation of Missouri and a veterans organization, 4-H shooting sports clubs. You can actually purchase a package of discounts and if people want to do it. So that's kind of a fun thing, too.
Well, it certainly sounds like it. But just out of curiosity, I always ask the goofiest questions, you know. But do you have the crowds built into this? The crowds that you have to push through?
No, in fact, we have a survey, and some people say they, you know, enjoy not having the crowds to deal with. But so we have seen that comment come up a time or two.
I bet. But this thing has to be the way of the future. I mean, who wants to go? I know you can see your buddies and that sort of thing, you know, at the big crowded halls, and that's kind of fun too. But boy, the older I get, the less I enjoy that. And something like this sounds like it'd be right up my alley. In fact, have you got a real sneaky way a guy can buy his own Christmas presents without being found out?
Absolutely, yeah.
I knew you'd have it.
I knew it.
Yeah, I knew it.
Hey, got a young man here over here in a bright red shirt, and he says that he knows you. You know? Do you know a Tommy Bench?
That name sure sounds familiar.
Well, I'll tell you what. Do you know a gentleman named Brent Frazee?
I do.
Yeah, I took you and him on a guided trip once. You was there in Pulaski County. And we went on the Gasconade right there. And Brent.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
it's been a few years back.
Tommy Bench actually took my place. I retired from the radio show a few months back, and Tommy.
Now, Bill, I heard they kicked you off.
Boy, the truth really hurts.
You had to put that on the air, didn't you? John, you may have to edit that part out.
No,
just kidding.
No. All the good fun. But, no, Tommy, I kind of baited him. I invited him in, had him on some shows and stuff, and we fished together, and he's a tremendous smallmouth guy and just an incredible personality. Big guy, you know, you have to listen to him. I mean, he just really struck a chord with me, and I thought, man, I got to keep bringing him in here because I was looking at a couple other jobs and that I couldn't resist, didn't want to turn down. So I baited Tommy, and he took it hook, line, and sinker, man.
He set the hook on me.
Well, good for both of you. Now, Bill, if you're these other jobs you're talking about, now, with all the witnesses of all the people that are listening to this show, you promised, and I've been after you for years, to take me fishing this spring or summer, and the other day you said, yes, we're going to do that.
Yes, we're going to do that. We may have to do it with Tommy Bench. Of course, I've been talking to you about Corey Cottrell for many, many years. Now, David, I set that up, and you just haven't shown up, buddy. The monkey's on your back.
I'm showing up.
You're showing up. All right.
There's thousands of witnesses listening to this, so we both got to show up.
Yeah, there's no turning back now.
Hey, you know I'll be there, and I'm sitting here thinking, you know, the wheels are always turning when you're talking about fishing. Corey Cottrell's an excellent fisherman and guide, and so is Tommy Bench. Well, you may have to stay 2 days and we do two trips.
May have to.
Hey, I'll tell you what, Tommy will attest to me, I cook a mean breakfast out on the river.
Oh, man.
One of his last riders. In fact, it was Milo, wasn't it?
It was Milo.
Yeah, I had Milo down, and he and Tommy floated along, caught all these big fish, and I floated ahead of them, boy, and they caught up with me. I had a big breakfast spread out, and boy, did we ever chow down. I had a great time. In fact, I was going to cook them lunch, too, but they weren't quite fishing long enough.
That was Milo. I tried to. I said, Milo, I'm hungry. He goes, I just don't feel like eating. It's too hot. And I was like, well, you're out then. I'll eat. I just couldn't talk Milo into stopping.
Hey, but he never said anything, so I just plugged along and munched myself. And then they hated me. About 1 o'clock, I finally picked up a rod with a bus bait on it. First cast I made, hooked the biggest fish of the day. And of course, being the humble sort of guy that I am, I'm trying to keep this fish on, and I'm yelling at those guys to hurry up and catch up with me because I want to hand the rod to one of them, take photos and
what did I
little
say?
Video. And they're yelling something at me. I'm pretty hard of hearing, but they wouldn't shut up. It kind of distracted me, you know, and my fish got off. But you know what they were yelling? Get it in the boat. Get it in the boat. And that's all I ever hear anymore.
I told him, I said, get it in the boat. We can take pictures when it's in the boat. I just told him, too. You know, I was just talking to Bill about how you could catch smallmouth with a buzzbait all day long. Most people just fish early light, low light conditions, early in the morning, late in the evening. I said, man, throw that thing all day long, especially around some shade, some wood cover, any kind of rock cover. Just, you never know. I mean, and
well,
now,
Tommy, that's one time I paid attention because I threw that big buzz bait right in missed a bunch of big rocks, and boy,
it was
scared me to death.
Well, the only reason why Milo and myself was so enthusiastic about it is we seen the thing jump out of the water, so it wasn't like, well, this is a nice one. We seen it. We knew it was huge. We knew it was pushing 4 pounds probably.
Oh, it was only a four-pounder.
Well, Tommy, you said – It was on Billy's line. Was it? What do you think it was? 12, 13 inches?
But it was fat.
David Gray, you've known me way too long.
Yep. It was a good time. We've had some good trips this year. I've had the pleasure of taking Bill a few times, and it's always been good fun. But I've got to get you guys back out there and make sure you talk him into bringing that breakfast. Because he's got the old gravel gourmet. Isn't that what it's called, Bill?
Gravel bar gourmet. You bet. But, hey, you're getting extra sand in your next dish. So.
Well, what's really nice.
That's David I'm talking to.
Yeah.
Is when Bill brings cigars along, too. Yeah.
Oh,
That's when the big one comes out.
Yeah. Man,
it's a pure pleasure any time to float down an Ozark River, but smell something cooking and everything, that's about as good as it gets.
Oh. Smells even better on the river.
It really is. And boy, I make some nasty coffee to go with it. Well, David, I think, Tommy, are we running up out of time?
Yeah, here?
Hey, real quick, like, tell us again how to get on that virtual site of yours.
It's Holiday Sportsman Show. You can put that in, Google it, or you can just put it in your browser, Holiday Sportsman Show. It'll come right up and check it out. There's some great brands in there and some really good buys, and you can actually buy this fundraiser thing, which the money goes to 4-H kids and conservation, and they got some real great discounts in there. In fact, they got a couple boat dealers in Missouri that are offering the fundraiser thing's a $15 donation, and they send you all these things to your inbox. And there's a dealer at Lake of the Ozarks that's offering $1,000 off any new boat purchase. And the fundraiser thing, they send you a code, an ID code, so you can get the discounts. But $1,000 off a new boat, that's pretty good for $15. If someone wants to do it, but you don't have to, you can just go to Holiday Sportsman Show and browse through the halls and see the brands, look at all the stuff. And if you want to buy something, it's right there to buy.
You bet you would. Hey, David, appreciate you being on the show. And, buddy, have a Merry Christmas.
Don't go away. We'll be right back with more with Bill Cooper. I'm Jerry Cook, and this is Wild at Heart.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart. We're happy to have Bill Cooper with us today. Welcome back, Bill.
Always fun to be here, man. Always fun to be here.
Yeah, we're having fun, aren't we?
Oh, I always do. I love to hear these stories. Some people call them lies, but I still call them stories, particularly when you're talking to a bunch of fishermen, man. And these guys put out a lot of facts, and I scratch my head and wonder how many are really true.
Yeah, well, you know,
there's a time and a place for that. There's sometimes you don't. It's okay to tell the truth, and there's other times it's okay to stretch it just a little bit.
There's times you evade the truth, I think.
Well, that's an understood among
fishermen. Where'd you catch that
among fishermen?
In the mouth.
Yeah.
Water. Well, Bill, we were going to – you've been doing some waterfowl hunting here lately, and how's that been this year?
Well, the key word is hunting.
Yes, yes. That's what I understand.
To quote a dear friend of mine, Chris Nelson, Tandem Fly Outfitters over on Stockton Lake, he also guides for waterfowl. Been doing that for a number of years, and to quote him, this has been the poorest start on waterfowl season I've ever had. And, you know, there's 42.3 million ducks coming down the flyway. Most of them have already come down. I haven't killed one yet out of 42 million of them.
What
well, you got a wood duck.
Well, yeah, I kind of had to confiscate that just for a photo, you know.
I was going to ask, you didn't hit it with your truck or anything, did you?
No, it was in Chris's shop sitting on a shelf, you know, and I just picked it up for photos. I have a duck.
Yeah.
Well, you think it's the weather patterns that have affected that this year?
Yeah. Hardcore duck hunters know that waterfowl hunting is extremely dependent on weather patterns and what happened far back as the teal season. Even a lot of the teal came through early. There was just a cold push up north, and boy, they blew through here. Only killed a handful, but yet guys in the Boot Hill did really well. Texas did extremely well because they got them all in a hurry
before they ever come up this far up.
Yeah, no, they're going south.
Or before, well, you said Texas got them all.
Yeah, they went through here and went south to Texas. You know,
right, so we missed them.
Yeah.
No, we didn't miss them. They just flew by us really fast. They went
really
through.
Fast.
And then regular waterfowl season came along. Again, we had an early cold blast that brought a lot of ducks down, and it was cold in northern Missouri. So I think the guys in southern Missouri and further south did better. Now, all of us watch this Ducks Unlimited duck migration forecast that pops up on our computers regularly, and numerous times since late October there, duck season started in the north zone, northern Missouri, late October, started for us, I think, in the middle zone, the 6th of November, and we watched push after push after push come down, and I just spent last week on the western side of the state, hunted for 5 days, and only killed one goose, and a property we hunted on CNR Outfitters, Wasn't much going on there, but right next door we have Four Rivers Conservation Area, about 17,000 acres, one of the larger waterfowl areas in the state of Missouri. And Tuesday, a week ago, there were 157,000 ducks sitting on Four Rivers. I didn't see one over in our place. And people all around the countryside were saying the same thing. I think there's so much food over there, they just hung in there. So being the smart guys that we are, we collected ourselves and we marched over the Four Rivers the next morning and broke ice for 2 hours. It froze up overnight and a lot of the ducks left, but there's still tens of thousands of ducks there. And we didn't go out to, I don't know, 9 or 9:30 because we were waiting for the ducks to start feeding and stuff. And, I mean, we had a plan, Tommy.
Yeah,
we were talking about a plan. We had a plan. The plan was to go to this particular spot that Chris had hunted, but plan didn't work out too well because some guys pulled in there about 3 minutes ahead of us. We had to go around the corner, and they got some shooting, but we stayed all day long and shot at 2 ducks. So waterfowl season us has been a sad affair so far. We cried a lot.
And were they feeding on corn primarily?
Yeah, lots of corn and soybeans there in Four Rivers, but even north of us. Now, good buddy Ken Keiser from Kansas City said that he did have a good shoot during that time frame, further north around Mountain City, I think. Smithfield Lake was covered up with ducks. The Shallow Sage area is 10 miles from where we were hunting at Four Rivers, shut down this year, but one of the lakes is still open. 100,000 ducks sitting there. Lots of ducks around, but not where we were.
Not where you were.
Yeah. That doesn't mean they're not out there. We're not giving up yet. I'm going to get one of those rascals before it's over.
Never give up.
Just never give up.
Keep grinding out.
Just like smallmouth fishing.
That's right. Never give up.
Get them in the boat.
Get them in the boat. I'm still going to have shirts made to say that. Start having a giveaway on the radio show once a month or once a week. Never give up. Or no, get it in the boat. Sorry.
Get them in the boat.
Get them in the boat.
Well, there's other things going on in the Ozarks.
Yeah, we were talking about something earlier here with one of Tommy's guests about cold weather fishing and personal flotation devices. I'd like for us, Bill, to talk about floating these Ozark rivers in this cold weather, camping, doing some overnight trips, and also personal flotation devices again, because I had an incident happen probably about 6 years ago. It wasn't in the wintertime. It was early spring, and I was in a canoe with my main fishing buddy. And we hit a rock on the Jack's Fork, and the water was high, and, of course, the water was cold. And guess who ended up underneath the canoe?
Oh, I've seen that happen more than one time. Knock on wood, I haven't done it yet. But, you know, one time in my 70 years, I bragged about having never turned a canoe over. You know what happened 5 seconds later?
I turned a canoe over.
Hey, that sounds like me talking about never getting a hook in my hand.
you don't say those things. You know, you just don't do it. You're plaguing yourself as soon as you make a comment like it. But it was at midnight. I was standing up in a canoe, poling it while we were frog gigging, and I just failed to look behind me and pushed backward, hit a log, and the lady sitting on the cooler in the middle of the canoe. First thing it hit the water was top of her head, and the water wasn't very deep, and old black nasty mud and moss and those 3 foot of moss hanging on each of her ears didn't make very good earrings.
Well, you know, what was really ironic about this is that we had life jackets in the canoe, but we weren't wearing them. And one thing I learned, they don't do you any good if you're not wearing them.
Exactly not, and still that's a common problem. Because one of the fallacies of floating these Ozark streams, be it summer, winter, any season of the year, everybody thinks they're not very deep. Yeah, that's true in lots of cases, but you don't turn over in shallow water very often. There's usually current involved, and there's going to be pockets. I've seen people get trapped in trees when they wouldn't have otherwise if they'd had a flotation device on, or at least it had been able to stay up. I mean, we pull people out that just almost drowned, and there are people that drown every year, spring, summer, whatever season, on these rivers. So you've always got to be cautious. Need to know what you're doing to an extent. Go with experienced people. And again, Tommy, this keeps coming up, but have some sort of plan. Have a rescue plan. Have you got a rope in your canoe you can toss to somebody?
Seat
cushions. You talked about making a human chain to get to somebody?
Yeah.
Talk about these things in your parties that you float with.
And especially in the wintertime, hypothermia can set in so quickly.
So quickly.
I personally would recommend that you never do a float trip in the winter, fishing, camping, whatever, or the combination of all of the above alone.
Yeah, it's not a good idea. My younger days, I used to do it a lot because I really enjoyed the aloneness out there. But particularly as I'm getting older, I don't do that anymore. But again, just having simple plans to know what to do in emergency goes a long way. And now talking about floating and camping, fishing in the wintertime, boy, I highly recommend it. It is one of my favorite times to go. And again, it's because of the isolation. You
right.
know, you get out there. You know, we know the three summer months are when all the aluminum hatch takes place,
right.
all the canoes hit the water, and it's crowded out there. Now, a lot of people love that. They're party people or just having a good time. And I like to see people have a good time like that. But to me, you get into the fall months and the winter months, man, I mean, the fall colors come on. There's not many people out there. There's not a lot of insects. There's just not a lot of other things to deal with.
Or you could go on the Upper Gasconade where nobody knows about. They don't float that.
Exactly.
How many times have we been out there, you and I, not seeing a soul?
Not seen a soul. But you know what? You can go to the heart of the Ozark National Scenic Riverways in the wintertime, and sometimes you're not going to see anybody, and occasionally you'll see a few people. And there is a growing core of people that are floating and camping in the wintertime.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, you pitch a camp on a gravel bar along one of these Ozark streams, and if it's a clear night, you can see stars you can't see any other time of the year. And as far as floating the streams themselves, you're going to see geological features and that sort of thing, caves that you can't see any other
right.
time of the year.
Yeah.
And it's so isolated, like you said, and the core people who are doing that now are out there for the same reason we are, because there's very few people out there. You don't have to worry about elbow to elbow like you do in the parks, but even on the rivers anymore, in the summertime, it's starting to get rather crowded at times, especially holiday weekends.
Oh, absolutely. That's the reason I like to go the off season. And I have literally, I've been in Ozarks for 40 years, and I've written from year one, go in the off season. The outfitters like that too. They like to have that business then. But yeah, again, do some studying though, because you've got to take some extra precautions that you don't have to worry about in the summertime. Take those extra clothes, Tommy,
to make a fire, you know, some lighters.
Absolutely. Yep. Boy, take lots of good food.
Yeah. Hey, well, we've got to wrap up this segment. It just flew by, but we'll be right back here in just a minute, and we'll just pick up where we left off. And this is Wild at Heart, and I'm your co-host, Jerry Cook.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3 FM. This segment of our show is brought to you by Colton Steakhouse and Grill in Rolla, where we know what's at stake. Welcome back, Bill.
Hey, so glad to be here. This is great fun, but you guys are keeping me up late.
Past your bedtime, huh?
You betsy.
Well, we were talking about fishing and floating the Ozark streams in the wintertime and the seclusion, but also the hazards involved as well.
There's plenty of both.
Plenty of both, absolutely. What do you recommend as far as clothing goes to stay warm and safe at the same time?
Lots of it.
Well, yeah.
Lots of it. And then extras.
And extras.
But just to sidetrack you a little bit, I love doing that, but it goes hand in hand with what we're going to talk about here with clothing. But been many, many years ago, I floated down Current River, middle of January. Now, I like to float in January because there's always what we call a January thaw. It warms up pretty good, but this wasn't a January thaw. It was just flat cold. And, we're talking single digits with about 18 inches of snow on the ground. There was no one else out there. We had the whole river for the 2 or 3 days all to ourselves. But one afternoon, we're floating along. The sun had come out. We'd warmed up just a little bit, you know, feeling pretty good and about half asleep. And all of a sudden, this big booming voice thunders out from somewhere. And I said, "Is that you, Bill Cooper?" And this, my buddy looked at me and said, "Was that God?"
What in the world?
And it was Bill Terry, our park ranger. Barry. I don't know what he was doing way out in the boonies.
And he's a big boy.
Yeah, and he was on foot. I don't know. That's Bill Terry. That's another story. But back to that clothing thing, and that was a good example of it. We had lots of the old style clothing, because that's been 30 years ago probably. But we talk old style. You and I know what we're talking about.
Right.
You know, some of those Goose Down Army mummy type bags.
Yep, yeah.
Great, great things.
They were warm.
They were until you get them wet.
Yeah.
And had some of that happen too. But today, there's just no excuse for not having good clothing. Just again, Tommy, your guy was talking about the fishing clothing,
right? Old heavy coveralls,
yeah,
or you know,
right, and can make a difference in life and death.
Yep.
And we have them available to us these days. And all of us as outdoorsmen now, I wish I'd known we were going to talk about this topic. I'd have brought some statistics in and talk about the money we spend.
Oh,
we don't want our wives to know that, but but when it comes to outdoor equipment, you know, I'm pointing fingers at all of you guys because you spend lots of money on good gear. That's why we got a expert smallmouth fisherman here.
That's
I guarantee
right.
you he's not using cheap gear.
No.
You're not using cheap gear.
No.
Jerry Cook's fly rods are certainly not cheap.
Nope. No, you're right. You're exactly right. We don't skip on the equipment, so why would we do that on our protective equipment, you know, on our clothing?
Exactly, particularly when you go out in cold weather, because the dangers are magnified many times over.
They are.
And you don't have to fall in the water to get frostbite, because if you're catching catching fish, what are you doing?
You're getting your hands in the water.
Yeah.
Getting them wet.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we have to worry about most is our digits, our hands and our feet, because they're the things that are usually going to get wet first.
Right.
And in temperatures like that, you can get in trouble in a hurry.
Yeah.
Hey, so spend the money on those good gloves. Get those hot hands. Wear that good clothing. And again, layer yourself. We wear that term out, but it's very, very important to us, and particularly out on a river when it's cold, you know, all of a sudden the wind picks up, and if you're just wearing thin materials, it's going to blow right through there, and you're going to have a miserable time.
Yeah.
And I've seen so many trips ruined.
I was going to say that. Ruin your whole trip all because you wasn't prepared.
Or your buddy can ruin it for you.
Exactly. Because he wasn't prepared.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or if you got several people going in a group. And I always carry enough clothing for one other person when there are several people going, because there will just almost always be one individual who comes poorly prepared. And that one individual can ruin the whole trip for you.
Yeah.
And you know those hot hands that you mentioned, those little chemical packs, boy, I tell you what, they really heat up. And in fact, you have to be careful and not get them too close to your skin, or you will burn yourself.
Yeah, you can do that. And, this last week trying to duck hunt was a perfect example of extreme weather. And lo and behold, I stepped in water, and guess what? Waders leaked.
Just enough to seep in there.
A little tiny bit. But I was wearing wool socks, and I carried extras. Mm-hmm. So I took hot hands and dropped down in a second pair at the toes, slipped them over, had two pairs of wool socks on, and with that little bit of heat and the wool, I was as warm as anybody
good
else, even
go.
Though the feet were damp, not
you know,
soaking wet.
I was going to bring that up. I've got a buddy that they just finished up their USA Bassin Series, which they won the championship, by the way, and I'll go ahead and say that. Congratulations to Josh Cornelison and Justin Travis. But anyway, they've just fished in really cold temperatures here last weekend. It was just Sunday, I guess, was their last tournament. And he said, you know, I am so – we're talking about the topic. That's why I'm bringing it up. But he said, I am sold on them hot hands. The ones, the body ones that have the adhesive, they literally will stick them all over their pants inside because they have layers. You know,
right.
So say you got your long johns or whatnot.
Sure.
Stick them all around everywhere. And he said it keeps them warm the whole day. Of course, they have layer jackets on.
Sure.
But that keeps their internal.
Boy, it's just that little bit extra. And you hit the nail on the head there, that internal core.
Yep.
And I have for decades taken those things and dropped them one down between my shoulders, you know, mm-hmm. between layers of clothing.
Yeah.
I've got a vest.
Is that ever nice?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've got a vest that has pouches in it to hold those heat packs. And you put a couple of shirts on and then put that vest on. And, boy, I tell you what, it keeps you toasty warm.
Exactly, because we're talking about clothing for this body, but there's other gear that on these cold weather trips that you need to take as well, too. We mentioned sleeping bags, but, boy, these days there's tents. They're just phenomenal. And
don't forget waterproof matches.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have a habit of taking several lighters. Everything goes in a plastic bag. You got to think about keeping everything dry because in extreme temperatures, you want everything to work.
Well, and that's another thing with when I fish in my John boats on the Upper Gasconade, all my tackle boxes are those waterproof. They got a rubber seal around them, and it locks down three different ways. And so I keep everything in a waterproof box. I have a box, like you said, specifically just for lighters, matches, whatever it is, something, a fire starter, and always keep that stuff with you because you just never know when something's going to happen.
Fire starter, another good point. You know, we talk about going in caves with Boy Scouts, you know, John, way back in those days, everybody talked about taking three sources of light. When you're out in these cold temperatures, three sources of heat is not enough. Take more than that. Take several lighters. You know, I always have a backpacking stove. There's fuel with that. I carried the little Sterno cans. Remember them?
I sure do.
And I even go to the Army surplus store once in a while. Remember the meals in Vietnam?
Yep.
We little tablets. Look like Salvo tablets. Anybody know what Salvo is? The old dishwashing tablets or the clothing tablets or whatever, but these little tablets look like that, and you can.
You're talking about MREs. That is what you're talking about.
Little green cans.
little green cans plus the tablets I'm talking about. They come in a little foil pouch that look like an Alka-Seltzer patch.
I know
something.
What Alka-Seltzer is.
Yeah. Well, these tablets, you can light them with a lighter, and you can cook a meal over them. Are a great source to warm your hands.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
You get them at the Army Surplus Store.
Oh, good old Sterno, man. There's no substitute for that stuff either. Yeah.
No, and of course those little tablets that used to come with a little bitty square things, little legs on it. Just set over the tablet, and you can set a pot and boil water or cook soup. Cook a meal.
Yep.
But the important thing is, again, plan. And you think you plan for a summer trip, plan 3 or 4 times as much for a winter trip.
Exactly.
And you don't take something along on a trip that's not important to you, and you don't take it not to work. So check that equipment before you go on a cold weather trip. And I mean, it's just like good practice. It's insurance.
Exactly.
And, you know, another thing that a lot of people don't think about is you take drinking water because you dehydrate faster, and you take even more food than you normally would because you consume more calories.
I got a question for you.
Yeah,
we were just talking about the same subject. You said you dehydrate faster. Mm-hmm. Do you know why you dehydrate faster in wintertime? Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Why?
I give up.
I was asking, do you know?
No, go ahead.
Well, I don't know this is a fact. I'm not saying it's a proven fact, but the theory that I have is in the summertime it's hot and it's just natural because you're hot, you drink more. In the wintertime, you very, very, how often do you think about just sitting there sipping on water all day because it's cold?
Exactly, but even the cold wind will dehydrate you.
Right.
So that's part of the
issue. And you're not putting
enough
fluids through your body in the wintertime.
And you're correct about that.
You know, when you think about sports, athletes, what are they always doing? Getting drinks, getting a drink, Gatorade, water, whatever it is to keep hydrated because their body's telling them, you need that. Well, in the wintertime, you're not really sweating. So
and you're absolutely right about that. And I'm probably one of the worst offenders about that.
Yeah. Well, another thing about the dehydration, though, is it'll throw you into hypothermia much quicker, too, if you get into an issue. So there's so much to think about. And my best advice to beginners is go with an experienced person.
You can.
And as you tell me, Tommy, pay attention.
Pay attention.
Absolutely.
That's right. And pay attention.
Just think safety.
Absolutely. Because, we've talked this whole show about, getting home to our loved ones. And we're going out with good intentions, man.
Yeah.
To have a good time, be with friends, enjoy, the creation that God has given us. And sometimes it turns into tragedy.
It does.
Because just didn't stop and think.
Right.
Yeah.
Didn't stop and plan.
You're exactly right.
Yep. Put as much time into planning as you do in the trip, I often say.
And you're absolutely correct about that. You can't plan enough.
Well, we're out of time again, Bill. It's been an absolute pleasure having you back here.
It's been great fun.
Golly, I can't wait to have you back again. It just kind of comes natural when you're here, just to sit here and talk. So, but
I've been doing it for 70 years.
I know, and now you handed the torch over to me, so I guess I can sit here and flap my jaws for a while. But hey, folks, stick around. You won't want to miss the next segment. I'm Tommy Bench, and this is Wild at Heart.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart, your source of information about the Ozarks and a few points beyond. This segment is brought to you by Gar Truck and Equipment and the Outdoor Superstore, your Husqvarna dealer located on the North Outer Road in St. James. We're back here with Zach Feeler still in the studio with us, and we're talking just a mixture of just outdoor activities this winter in general. Talking about smallmouth fishing, we're going to talk a little bit about some lake fishing, and, you know, because him and I both do a lot of the same stuff. So that's why we're here, and welcome back, Zach. And I know you've been here, but yeah. Welcome back to the segment that we're concentrating on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate you being on, and it really means a lot to me, and it's always nice to talk to you. So, you know, one thing that I've been doing here lately is I switch it up so much. In the wintertime, I really concentrate on crappie fishing. And I very rarely crappie fish at all from May through October. But then towards the end of October. Yeah, and then I started getting into crappie and trying
to stop. It's bass season.
It's bass season. But, hey, you know what? What are some of the things? You know, here's another thing I did that I've been meaning to talk about. My good buddy Jack and I went out the other day. And we was doing some bass fishing, and I don't fish the lake very often. Everyone thinks that I don't. I mean, you know better than anyone. I'm a river rat.
Me too.
Yeah,
me too.
We are always on that river. Very rarely we're on the lake, and when it is, it's usually like a big bass or something like that. So Jack was kind of shocked the other day whenever he said, "You don't." He asked me, and I said, "I do not fun fish on this lake for bass." He goes, "You're kidding me." I said, "I really don't. I don't remember the last." He said, "If I'm fun fishing on this lake for bass, it's with you." We're talking to him, and it's in the wintertime. So anyway, so we're trying to figure out this pattern. We're trying to catch some fish, and we figure out a pattern. And that's the thing I can tell, attest to anything. You know, don't just go out there slinging stuff. And I mean, try to figure out why you did it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, I ended up catching probably my personal best, my biggest bass. I sent you a picture of it, John, that big bass. Yeah, it's a giant.
Yeah, I seen it on Facebook. That was a big one.
It was a good one. Well, Jack has caught – he's had a client catch a 10-pounder, which is like a dream, I mean, as a guide.
I've seen that.
It was all over the news, and, I mean, people coming down from everywhere. So he's not shot. He knows what 6-pounders was, 5-pounders, 7-pounders. He's caught a 10-pounder out of a pond. And he, as big as like the Ozarks bass, was 9 pounds. So we were talking about that. It's still a flipping giant. Yeah, that's a giant. But as soon as I caught it, I won't lie, it's right here, right on ESPN, Wild at Heart, right here. I caught it on a rock crawler, red crawl pattern, and we were throwing jerk baits. We were looking for shad. We couldn't find them. At first, we find some shad, schools of shad, and he's like, "Man, look at all them crappie." We just couldn't help it. So we start shooting this dock, catching a few crappie. We burn half the day. We didn't really get out there till at noon. But so anyway, I'm trying different stuff. I throw this rock crawler on this windy point, and we were just coming up on it. And I hadn't got 3 cranks on this thing. That's, you know, you can just imagine what it's doing. It's working its way down. And, I mean, it was like a freight train. Wham! I mean, it smoked it like a drum would.
Really?
And I just kind of pulled back, you know, because I don't really set the hook on a crankbait. You just kind of pull back. And I knew it was a big fish. And Jack, he's always messing with me, always. I caught a walleye once. We were actually walleye fishing. He's smacking it with the net trying to knock it off. I'm like, "Quit it, Jack," you know, and anyway, so I'm reeling this fish in, and as I'm fighting it, I realize this is a huge fish. You just know.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, "This is a giant. If this is a bass, this is a giant." And he's like, I don't even think he heard me say that. I don't know, because he was just like, "Oh, whatever." I said, "Get the net, man. Please get the net." He takes his line, and as soon as that thing comes up, he smacks it with his lure trying to knock it off my line. Yeah, but it never broke the surface. You could just kind of tell it was coming up. And yeah. then he smacked the line. They went back down. And I said, man, stop messing around. This is a giant if it's a bass. Oh, it's probably a drum. That's what he said.
Yeah.
Well, then he grabs the net. He goes, okay, where's it at? You know, and it comes up. And he said, oh, my gosh, that's a giant. He knew it right then.
You tried to tell him.
I told you. I said, if it's a bass, it's a giant. And so it comes up and dives back down. It never broke the surface, but it come up to where you got a good look at it. My eyes about bowls out of my head because I've caught 5-pounders before, and I knew this was way bigger than any 5-pounder I've ever netted. And so anyway, we ended up netting it, and I was like, as soon as we netted, I said, how big do you think? And he said, that's got at least 6.5 pounds. Mm-hmm. He said, it might be 7. It's at least 6.5. And so I'm pretty thrilled about it, you know. And anyway, so we got some pictures. Of course, he don't have no skills. And I said, why would you be a guy to not have any skills? He said, because if there's a client out here and they got their mindset on catching a 5-pounder and they catch a 4.25, yeah. He's got a 5-pounder.
Yeah, it's 5-pounder.
And that's what it takes for them to go away happy, fine.
Right.
So anyway.
So my question, Jerry, for Tommy, when I saw the picture was, if you'd caught this a few weeks ago, would that have been a $100,000 fish?
Yeah. And when I told him, I said, well, I can't. I said, probably so.
Yeah.
Because I think it was a six something that won the big bass fish in the fall. It was Oliver Nye that caught it. I can't remember what his fish was. Was it 680?
Yeah,
right. And yours turned out to be a 7-pound fish.
Well,
right?
We were guessing. We never technically weighed it, but I'm telling you, I've caught enough 5-pounders. I know this thing dwarfed any 5-pounder I've ever caught.
Yeah.
I mean, just the sheer mass of this thing.
Well, according to that picture you showed up, if you're trying to compare them, it was bigger.
Oh, it's way bigger.
Looked a lot bigger.
And you couldn't hardly tell in the picture because in the picture, I had one that officially weighed in a big bass batch of 5.49 pounds. Side by side, I put them side by side, same exact picture, same hands. It's the same person holding both fish, made my face the same size. There's really no lying about it. I mean, it's not like one was further out than the other, right next to each other. If you look at them, they're almost exactly the same length, but the one I just caught, I mean, it's girth, massiveness. Head, I mean, wait, in the picture does it zero justice because the other fish was 549. If you look closer, there's a white pole behind it. It kind of looks like its belly is still. Mm-hmm. It's not. It was really a skinny fish. So I don't know. All I know is it don't take a whole lot. You bulk up, you got a guy my height that's the size of Zach there, and you're gonna gain a lot of weight just for the mass, you know, for the mass of it. So anyway, I'll never truly know, so I can say whatever I want about it.
I'd say it was safely over 6.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It was easily bigger than that.
Definitely that. So
John, is that one of these cases where next week it'll be a 10-pounder?
It may be. Yeah.
Yeah.
You just it'll be 7.5 next year.
you never know. So what's your biggest bass on the lake, Zach? I mean, cause I know you've caught some nice fish. You've cast a check into a big bass before.
Yeah, I cast one I think it was last year in the spring. I don't fish like that that much for bass, honestly.
Me neither.
Just every now and then. And,
well,
you know, really the big bass, I'll go up there and fish it.
You know what I told Nathan Oliver. Nathan's a good friend of mine, too, and we've had him on the show here last couple. He's a big hammer up there. I mean, he's good. But I told him, I said, I do not fish the lake very often, but when I do, Seth will tell you this. Tommy's so the luckiest guy you ever fished with on Lake of the Ozarks. It seems like every time I go there to bass fish, I'm catching a 4 to 6 pounder.
Yeah.
I just do. That's when you can say you're truly lucky because I don't fish that lake very often.
But there's a lot of 4 to 6 pounders in that lake, too.
There is, but.
Yeah, you don't catch them every time.
No.
There's a lot of them up there.
It was fun. It was fun that day. And once we figured out they was on them windy points, then it was game on. It was fish after fish. After. Yeah. Of course, that was by far the biggest one, but.
Yeah.
So what's some other stuff you like to do in the winter? I mean, we'll talk to Jerry too, but I mean, what's some of your favorite fish? Because mine are crappie and smallmouth. Because the smallmouth in the winter, I know you do too, but you can't hardly beat that. In the wintertime, they school up, and once you know their holes, it is so fun.
Well, you know, river fishing is that's what I know. It's what I do. It's close to home. You know, it's a half hour away.
Yep.
You know, so that's basically what I do the most of. And outside of deer season, you know, I'm usually bass fishing. But pretty much about it. I mean, I'll go up there to the lake every now and then with my uncle or somebody to catch some crappie or something.
Yeah.
That's about it.
So when you're fishing on the river, are you specifically targeting smallmouth from November to February through February?
You know, not really. It just kind of depends on what area I'm fishing it.
I mean, have you ever went on the river that time of year and said, let's go catch some, because I'll be honest, I don't know very many spots that I can just say, let's go catch some crappie on the river. I know Jeff Schultz has got a couple spots, but I don't on the upper Gasconade. I have spots that I know they're there. I'd be lucky to catch three or four of them, and they spook out, and it's done, you know.
I know where I've caught them before. I know where I've seen them caught before, and I'm not going to tell those places on the air, obviously. Yeah. There aren't very many of them.
But, I know. Those are far and few between.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, have you ever gotten any good largemouth spots? I mean, usually where the smallmouth are, the largemouth are too, in the wintertime.
Yeah.
It's just a school of everything.
Pretty much, yeah. Actually, I went fishing today for a few hours before the show here, and I found one little spot where I caught, I think, five or six back to back to back.
Did you already know that spot before?
I don't really think that spot being a really good fit spot for just the wintertime only. It's pretty much a good spot year round.
Yeah.
But I was catching smallmouth and Kentuckys off the same exact spot.
Huh.
And they were back to back to back. You know, you never know what it might be. And this whole bank is good for either species.
Yeah.
And but I mean, it just kind of depends on, you know, what I know a lot of the good holes in the river, a lot of my good spots I like to go to, and you know, fishing tournaments all the time. You know, you can weigh in largemouth or smallmouth, and I just, you know. Typically, what I use for smallmouth works for largemouth too. Sometimes,
yeah.
Unless you're trying to target just smallmouth or just largemouth, but pretty much a jig. But I like to throw. You know, you can catch both of them on it.
Well, that's something I want to talk to you about because I was thinking about this. Zach Bechtel was actually asking me the other day. He was talking, and he said, "I wonder why." He said, "What's your opinion on why we never have any river tournaments?" And I gave him my opinion, and we'll talk about it here in about 5 minutes. But I want to get your opinion on that and see why you think, because I mean your dad runs our series and he does a dang good job at it. But I was just curious to get your opinion on why we don't have tournaments in the wintertime and specifically, you know, when you target largemouth versus smallmouth versus colors and some of that stuff that some people may not ever think about. But we'll get to that here in just a few minutes. And we'll talk about all this kind of good stuff because it's something I've been wanting to talk to you about for a while, being both of us are big smallmouth guys. So stay tuned. We'll be right back in just 3 minutes. I'm Tommy Bench, and this is Wild at Heart.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back. I'm Tommy Bench, and you're listening to Wild at Heart. We're back here in our final segment, back with Zach Feeler, my good buddy and smallmouth guru. And I say guru, he's just a smallmouth specialist, and he's good at it. And every time, you know, I've been fortunate. I've been lucky. I've only fished one smallmouth-only tournament, and I got dang lucky to win it. Remember that one I caught off that jig? It was almost 4 pounds.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, we won that one. But your dad has some smallmouth tournaments every year the same time that the Big Bass Bash is going on, and I try to commit the whole weekend to that, and it always bothers me because I love smallmouth, and I would love to fish that tournament.
Yep.
But in a way, I'm kind of glad because I know anytime you're fishing a smallmouth-only tournament, it's going to be tough. And I'm only saying that because even when we fish for black bass in general, you're always coming up with some stud smallmouth. Always. He's always I was like, golly, look at those smallmouth. You always know Zach's going to have good – you come up there by yourself. He's fished by himself a lot of times and still comes up there, wins tournaments, or is right there right in the mix of it. So, anyway, let's talk about colors. We're not going to specifically talk about – and I still want to talk about the wintertime tournaments.
Hmm.
But, hey, let's just get – I'll tell you what. This is what we'll do. We'll get that out of the way. Some guys were asking me why we don't our series. Zach and I fish the same series with Seth and Jeff Schultz and a lot of the other guys I've had on here. Ask us why we don't have tournaments in the wintertime, especially when we love fishing in the wintertime. And those fish are stacked up, and we catch some of our biggest smallmouth in the wintertime. The reason why I think we don't have it, and if your dad's listening or watching, then maybe he can answer this later on. Or he, you know, maybe you know. Here's what I think. I think there's only a few really, really good smallmouth spots on that river that's going to be, like, loaded with fish, just loaded, especially January, February, late December, like right now, or it's mid-December, I guess, approaching. But if you do that, it's going to be one of them deals to where the biggest, baddest guy, motors, is going to be there first, and people are going to say, well, what's the point in even fishing it if I can't – me and Seth can't compete with you guys. You'll blow us out of the water to get in the spot if you wanted to. And same thing with like a Sapper or a Schultz. Mm-hmm. They can get there faster than anyone else. It don't matter if they was the last boat taken out. So that was my theory, because I know that there's not going to be a ton of spots. It's not like the summertime when there's probably – 80 or 100 different spots where you could catch fish on them stretches that we're right. fishing. Now it's narrowed down a minimum, you know, maybe 8 or 10 spots on the whole river, or, you know, within range. What do you think on that?
You know, honestly, we don't talk about it a whole lot. It's not really something we really talk about. But typically, you know, this time of year, you know, a lot of guys are deer hunting.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
It's around the holidays and they're busy. And
yep.
We probably wouldn't have that much of a turnout. You know,
that's
probably
what,
to be
what
honest,
I was thinking.
You know, it's cold out. Not many guys are out there fishing. It's 10 degrees, 20 degrees out.
Even though they're tournament fishermen mm-hmm. like us, there's still some guys that aren't necessarily die hard. They're like, hey, if it's warm, I'll go. If it's 22 degrees, you guys, that's your cup of tea, not mine.
Yeah.
Because I've been out there, and I know you have too, when your guides are freezing up. I was going to ask you, Jerry, I don't know if it's an issue with the fly rod, but it becomes an issue for us guys with spinning rods or bait casting. You know, I throw casting a lot. Your guides will freeze up, especially the micro guides.
Yeah, I've been out there a number of times when my guides were freezing up.
What do you do?
On heavier rods, put it in the water because mm-hmm. the water temperature is warmer than the air temperature.
Right. Well, same thing we do.
But yeah. I recall vividly, probably 4 or 5 years ago, I was down on the Merrimack, and I was throwing a three-weight rod, which is a lightweight fly rod, and it had been casting well. I was catching fish, and all of a sudden it's like, what's wrong? This rod is not
– It wasn't.
Wasn't casting well.
Try Take doing that with crappie fishing.
Yeah, I took a look at the tip section. Those guys were all froze up.
Well, and that's what I was getting to, because I know you fish – we only fish mainly for crappie in the wintertime. I don't crappie fish from May through October. Towards the end of October, early November, I'll start thinking about crappie fishing and stocking the freezer up. But – what happens is you're fishing late in the wintertime, and I don't know why the crappie is just so good in the winter. I don't know why that is, but either way, they stack up. Well, what happens is your guides start freezing up, and you know as well as I do, one thing you want is you want a good ultralight rod that you can get good sensitivity, and you want a super smooth reel. You don't want a reel, a cheap reel that grinds or is not super smooth at slow speeds.
Now, I'll tell you.
That's what happens when your guides start freezing. It starts kind of, you know, you're like, oh man, you know, you got to clean it all out. It's kind of a pain, but
Loon makes a product that I stock in my shop that is called Stanley's Ice Off, and you just put that on your guides and it keeps them from freezing up.
I'm gonna have to get some. We're gonna have to try
that. I've never heard of that.
Me neither.
And of course, the only time I sell it's in the wintertime, you know.
Yeah.
In the summertime, it kind of sits there.
I guarantee you guys, like Zach and myself, I'll buy some, unless it's just like $50 for a 2 ounce bottle or something.
It's only, I think, $5 or $6.
Oh, it's well worth
tub.
It. If it works, it's well worth it.
And it works. Yeah, it works.
I'm going to have to get some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Not these other never guys heard of that.
Yeah, Loon's Ice Off.
Yeah, Loon's Ice Off. We'll have to remember that, Zach. Yeah, we'll get some. No hey, kidding. Speaking of which,
Stanley's Ice Off by Loon. It's what it's called. Yeah.
When are you planning on going fishing next, Zach?
Oh, I don't know.
I think it's supposed to rain next couple of days, but
I'm
going
to
be going
this week. Probably next week, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I get time.
Well, I know you've been catching some big smallmouth. We're going to have to go soon.
I know.
Have the chance.
We need to.
And we really do. I need to show you some of my spots.
I'll call you never. Yeah, do that. I never been up there, that side of the river.
Oh, you'd like it. It's solitude, pure solitude.
I hear how good it is.
Bill Cooper's Schultz have been there with me. Did you ever talk? Oh my gosh,
he talked about it. He said it's amazing.
It is, and it's just like anything else. It's not a guarantee that you're going to catch multiple 3 and 4 pounders, but the chances are a lot higher.
Yeah,
does that make sense? Uh-huh. It's just you catch multiple 18 inches where our spot, you know, one 18 inch in a day, it's like woohoo,
got a big one. No doubt,
but there is big fish. I mean, we've mm-hmm. seen them. Zach, speaking of which, I'm going to throw this out there. I told you he's a smallmouth specialist, and I pride myself on being kind of the same way. I caught one that was 4. We're not going to compare apples to apples or whatever it is, but it's for a giant smallmouth, 430, 440, whatever it was, 438, I think, whatever it was. Different scales, though, and I'm convinced the scales are a little bit different.
Yeah, I haven't seen any two that are exactly alike, unless you get into the
certified scales.
High dollar scales.
I'm not talking about handheld scales. I'm talking about tournament proven tournament scales.
Right.
About digital high dollar scales, but still, we all know our fish pretty well. Yep. And it just seems like the Gas Go Stage Buddy Bassmasters scales are a little bit lower than the Walmart, them guys. It seems like they weigh a little bit heavier, and I'm actually taking a little bit away from my fish. I still think it was a 4-pounder, but Zach caught one that was over 4 pounds in a smallmouth only tournament. A 4-pound smallmouth on any river stream around here.
That's a nice fish.
That's more than a nice fish.
Yeah, that's a nice
fish. That is a giant smallmouth, because there's so many people that don't really truly realize how big of a fish a 4-pounder really is until you hold one in your hand.
Yeah. I'm happy with a 2-pound smallmouth.
Well, I'll tell you what, I caught one years ago, and it still might be the biggest, heaviest fish I've ever caught. And I went to go boat flip. I use 20-pound fluorocarbon. I'm being a little silly. You know, my buddy's there, and I got my daughter with me. I'm showing off. You know, I go boat flip it. Well, it was so heavy, I couldn't get it up high enough. It hits the side of the boat, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. I had to reach down, and luckily I had a good hook set on the roof of its mouth. I get it in the boat, get a picture of it, and my buddy was like, oh, my gosh, I didn't know the smallmouth could get that big. I said, you got to hold this fish. He goes, I didn't catch it. I said, I don't care. You ever hold a fish of that caliber, and you will truly appreciate.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
You'll know whenever you hook one.
Exactly. You'll know. And I let him hold it. He just couldn't believe it. And it's an amazing feeling, and that's why we have the passion we do for catching those fish.
It's all worth it.
So, but, you know, we're talking about colors. I'm big on color. Are you two? We just talking about green pumpkin. Mm-hmm. That's almost what we have here. Not quite. It's got a little bit of candy color in it. But what are some of your favorite colors? If you was to give someone some tips on smallmouth, we'll just talk about the Gasconade River, because that's kind of our home water, you and I. And what are some colors you would throw out there? And I'll tell you what. No, I'll let you go first, because I don't want you to have the same color as me, and you feel like you don't want to repeat. Yeah. So go ahead. I'll tell you, even if it's the same exact ones.
Well, when it comes to plastics, I mean, like I said before, I mean, it's pretty much green pumpkin. It's going to be a green pumpkin with maybe a little bit of different flake in it. You know, just I got a whole box full of different colors. But pretty much I use green pumpkin.
Okay. Now, what about if you're going to go to a moving bait, like a crankbait, spinnerbait, buzzbait, any kind of bait like that, not a soft plastic?
Yep.
What kind? Is there any specific colors that you think stand out for a smallmouth over another color?
Well, you know, I've always heard that smallmouth like chartreuse, and so I guess that works. I mean, yeah. I typically...
Do you have confidence in that color, or is that just something you've heard?
That's what I've heard. I don't really use it. I'm typically use more of a white, either white or black.
Yeah.
On spinner baits and buzz baits, either white or black.
Well, I'll tell you my colors, and this is just me. And I'm real big on the colors, and think that sometimes it really makes a difference. Mm-hmm. But I've noticed that chartreuse is really good, and it makes a difference. Mm-hmm. Orange is also a color that really stands out for a smallmouth. And the reason I think that orange does in particular, I think the chartreuse has something to do with the bluegill pattern and the colors on a sunfish. But the chartreuse, or the orange in particular, have you ever noticed how much orange and there is in crawdads?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there's a ton of it.
Sure.
And it's just and same thing with the bluegill. Mm-hmm. But I've always been good on orange or chartreuse. So in particular, like with my jigs, I'll put a few strands of orange in there. I've always found that to be better.
Yeah.
My buzzbait, which you know is... I'm a chartreuse guy through and through.
Yeah.
And it's a confidence thing, I think, too, because I've done so well in the past. I truly think that I could probably go and grab a white one and do just as well, but that's just the confidence thing.
Probably.
Yeah, who knows?
That's what matters.
That's all that matters.
You got to have confidence. If you're not confident in what you're throwing, you're not going to throw it the right way.
That's exactly right. You've got to have that confidence, and I'm truly believe if you hand me something, I'm thinking, I'm not going to catch anything on this. More than likely, I'm not. Or I'm not going to get very good bites.
Exactly.
But once I catch one or two or three, now it's like, okay, this thing really works. And then I really got it going.
Exactly.
But, man, this show has just blew by. Zach, it has been an absolute blast to have you here in the studios and have you talking.
It's been fun.
Man, it's been great.
Appreciate
I can't wait to have you back again. We'll have to get some wintertime fishing done, you know, with now. Well, I'll tell people later. We got some big news coming up about the show. But we'll talk about that later. But in the meantime, Wild at Heart is heard every Wednesday afternoon from 4 to 6 and Sunday morning from 8 to 10. The show is produced in the studios of ESPN 107.3 in Raleigh and engineered by the one and only John Francis. We'd like to thank our guests today, Zach Feeler, Bill Cooper, David Gray, and Darren Kime. Don't forget, you can always listen to a podcast of this show. Just go to our website at ESPN1073.com. Click Programming and Wild at Heart. I'm Tommy Bench.
And I'm Jerry Cook.
Thanks for joining us.